This is Connor Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Don Eubanks, associate of Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the state of Minnesota. Any comments and ideas that I share are strictly my own and should not be imputed to my employer.
I'm Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church and owner of Dendros Group.
And I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and producer of Counter Stories.
We have a guest with us today, and I'm proud to say we have another Mille Lacs band member, so I don't feel so lonely. But with us, joining us this is Adrian Benjamin. And Adrian, if you could please introduce yourself and your new job title.
Mikagabu Ikwe, Indigenous Cause, Mississaugagne, Ndunjaba, Chiminising, Inda. My name is Adrian Benjamin. I am from Mille Lacs, but more specifically from the Isle community in that reservation. I also started a new job position recently with Minnetonka as their reconciliation advisor, which has caused a lot of buzz.
A lot of buzz, and it's that new position that has us all giddy. And so, Adrian, can you tell us a little bit about what your position is and what it is that you hope to be able to provide to Minnetonka Moccasin?
Sure. So I was introduced to Jory Miller Scherer, who is the president, and to David Miller, who's the CEO. They're a father and daughter. They're a family-run business by an elder from Minneapolis area. And the meeting was prefaced to talk about, I wasn't given the name of the company actually first. It was, hey, we just have this company that has done some serious appropriation and they want to talk. And this person was having issue finding folks that were even willing to hear it just off of that preface alone. So her and I had had some discussions previously about the way that, I mean, I've worked in a lot of like systems change in really difficult situations as far as like public schools up north here and border towns of the Mille Lacs Reservation. And so I thought I was interested. I was interested to hear the conversation. I was definitely interested to hear a company that was willing to, hear me out for sure. That was one thing, you know, that was important for them to listen just as much as it was for me to listen to anything that they had to say. So those meetings happened and I was really impressed with like the understanding and the admissions. And I think it was a long time coming for them that they had been wanting to do something. They weren't sure what. They had been talking to other folks in Indian country about this for some time and just really weren't sure. Like they wanted to make sure that their steps forward were going to be, you know, jive with the community. They didn't want to obviously make fools of themselves. So they were really doing some research and I was impressed with that. So as far as my role, after quite a few meetings and some really awkward conversations, I decided that I was willing to try it out. And we started out with just like a 3 to 6 month base and to see where this goes and like what happens with these meetings that we had. And it just has worked and it has definitely, not been all butterflies and honey. There's been some really difficult conversations that I've had directly with Jory and David, about how deep this runs. And I think as we've, as the reconciliation advisor, like I said, it was a self-chosen title that they let me, that they were like interested to see what I would say. And I thought, you know, if we're reconciling relationships, then this is what I would call it. And I think it's a pretty powerful title to, you know, to move forward in that aspect. So I think as we started to even just have base meetings with some organizations in Minneapolis and even some with other tribes and schools and just introducing them, like I thought one of the main things, aside from the apology, the public apology and the, you know, that part of things. The other important thing was for them to, in a sense, put their money where their mouth is, right? And to start really donating back into communities. If you're apologizing for economic appropriation, then that's kind of the thing that doesn't happen very often. And to really build relationships with community to where they can feel like, you know, they're going to earn some trust before anybody is going to want to work with them, before anybody's going to want to listen to what they say or anything, you know, because this has been going on for so long. So that was where we started. And it was really, I think one really interesting thing that has happened is that every single conversation that we've had with anybody, whether it's about like moving forward and, you know, maybe doing some artwork or mural work or looking at redesigning like the Thunderbird logo, different things, right? We've had different artists and conversations with different people. Like that appropriation is on the table in every single conversation that we've had. And that's been really interesting because it just goes to show, I think, how deep that runs for every person. You know, on a different show, I was asked a question, well, don't you think it's interesting that Native cultural appropriation isn't as forefront as like other types of appropriation? And my answer was, but it is. If you ask an Indigenous person, like, we get sick of it. We see it every day. Like, you know, and like every time we hear Minnetonka, like, boom, it's there. You hear it, you feel it, you remember all of those things or whatever, you know? So I think it's just, but that's what's happened so far in these conversations is that people bring it up and they want to have their say. They want to tell their stories about how like that appropriation made them feel, or maybe tell a story. I mean, we've had interesting stories about someone's grandma actually beaded for Minnetonka, like in the 60s and 70s, beaded the tops of those shoes. And so it was a different feeling for them because it supported their household, you know? So it's been really interesting thus far. To answer the other part of the question, where do I see it going? I think there's a lot of different ways. I'm pretty excited to, as an artist myself, really give other artists an opportunity to use, you know, the light that Minnetonka already has to put it on Native art and to give, you know, other folks who probably wouldn't ever have an arena that big to get some design work, to put themselves and their art out there through a company that's already established that wants to, you know, step up and do that. And obviously there's, you know, the donation end of things and giving back to community. And that part really excites me also. So we're really looking at how right now all of those things can kind of work together to create like an eventual cycle of if Minnetonka is going to move forward and wants to sponsor and use their light to shine light on actual Indigenous art instead of appropriated Indigenous art, then how do we do the giving in a way to where it all works out? So if we're giving, you know, teaching people new beadwork techniques or whatever it is, how does that translate into, you know, eventual, you know, art opportunities for people in the future, right? And
you've been listening to Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks with crew members Anthony Galloway, Luz Marie Freyas, and Halee Lee, and our special guest, Adrian Benjamin. Support for this show is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
The Minnetonka Moccasins came out with an official statement, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it so that our audience gets, you know, a little grounded in what we're talking about. Quote, "We Minnetonka deeply and meaningfully apologize for having benefited from selling Native-inspired designs without directly honoring Native culture or communities. We are dedicated to honoring our commitment to Native American communities with our actions going forward." So that's just a little snippet from the statement. So did you meet with them before this statement, or was it something that you met with them after the statement?
It was prior. We've been working together since early this year, maybe even the end of last. I can't remember. It's been just a whirlwind with the pandemic and this and all this stuff. But so we've been working together on this plan. Like, what is step one? How do you move from, I mean, really complete appropriation, which they've now admitted, right, to doing better. And that's where I came in to try to help them. Like, what is step one? What is step two? How do we move forward? Like, what are the different ways that they can do better and do better by the community, do better in their giving. And I will say this too, as Minnetonka is a family-run company, they have been giving not in the public eye for some time. And that was another thing that kind of was interesting is that, like I said before, I think that this was something that they've been wanting to move forward with and just hadn't known how, because their family had been privately giving to Indigenous organizations in the metro and nationally for some years, even prior to the announcement a couple weeks ago.
I wanted to have an understanding of why now. This company was created and established in 1946, so 75 years ago. Why now? And, you know, and I know that you're responding to a question that, you know, certainly those decisions or the inclinations were considered before they brought you on, probably. But can you help us understand why now? I mean, what was there a catalyst in particular that prompted them to begin to do this? That's the part that's confusing to me and probably other listeners as well.
Thank you for pointing that out. I definitely am not their like co-signer or spokesperson by any means. Like, I feel like I'm more of their like the navigator of process moving through. From the conversations that we've had and my understanding of where this came from for them was, like I said, they had been thinking about it for a long time, how they wanted to go about this, having meetings prior to even meeting me with other folks in the Indigenous art world and philanthropy in general. It really hit them with the murder of George Floyd and how everything started to kind of, I guess, progressiveness caught up with them in a sense of pushing that forward. And, you know, there was talks about, you know, it being more apparent. They were getting a lot more call outs on the website, on their emails, all of that stuff. So, you know, just as much as the progressive movement was happening nationwide, it was happening in little channels at Minnetonka that, you know, nobody else really thought about but them at the time. The president, and probably will eventually take the company over. And I think that she's just in that generation of growing up and getting it. And not that David doesn't, because he does, and he's very much on board with all of this. But I think that, you know, Jory just has that younger push behind, you know, understanding social justice, wanting to do better, and knowing that, you know, something she's going to take over one day is something she can feel good about and wants to do better. I think just in general, that was what the catalyst was that pushed it forward for them to just say, okay, like, this is, we want our family legacy to be this, not that. And this is the time. So that was my understanding in the chats that we've had.
Your position is, I don't know if there's another position like this anywhere in the country, is there?
The good thing is, Don, that's exactly the question I was going to ask, is just specifically about, you know, are you, I was wondering if you're seeing other business entities or other folks in different fields, whether they are examining their own company's appropriation or not, starting to take this example and apply it to them looking at their own interactions with various communities. Are you seeing this have any effect, you know, even beyond in the general business community?
This past weekend, I actually had a conversation with one of my other Indigenous artist activist friends, and we were talking about this role. Her and I hadn't really discussed it yet. You know, she was talking about how there are other companies that, you know, have obviously appropriated a lot. Like, we can name, Indigenous folks can name a lot of them that have done this. And a lot of them have done these very subtle and quiet movements, right? Like, some of these companies who've done this for a long time have now started taking on board members and having advisory councils and really pushing Native artists and doing like the things that are right and good, but have never done the public facing like apology acknowledgement. That's what I see out there. And that was really interesting because when we were gearing up for the announcement and the public apology, when this, when we had the press release and we were talking about how this was going to go, like, it, I think it was Footwear News and the Star Tribune were the two media outlets at the time that when we were just like, well, we hope Native people see this. That's what I wanted. That's what their really goal was. Like, we want people to start that trust there. Like, we want to admit this. We want to, you know, have this be public as, you know, and I gave that credit. Like, I feel like it's owning some serious stuff and, you know, it's a lot of shame involved in that ownership. And so, I mean, I think it was a really empathetic, but also risky move, you know, because now look at like, I mean, I think the crazy thing is we were on like the Daily Mail Snapchat story, daily story or something. Somebody was sending it to me all the time. And to think about that, I mean, I think just alone in that announcement, and I told this to Minnetonka, obviously this is not, that's not all I want to see happen or all they want to see happen. But I said, even if it was just that, you already made that subject, you know, blow up, right? Like, we're talking about it now. And it got to bigger channels. And without doing that and being that brave and bold and, you know, public facing, it probably wouldn't. You know, they could have just started to, we could have quietly done the work and just hired Native artists and gradually, you know, phased out of their products that are appropriative and everything else like that. But doing it this way, like I said, I think it really set an example in their industry and, you know, just business wide across the country to get that conversation going. You know, it was like crazy to me that very same weekend I get a call to be on NPR, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, like, that was really cool. Like, didn't expect that at all. And taking on this role, to me, it was just always about like helping them do the right thing and to try to utilize those resources and what they were wanting to give and do, like, to community the best way that I could, because that's been my life's work, you know. So
you've been listening to Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks with crew members Anthony Galloway, Luz Marie Freyas, and Halee Lee, and our special guest Adrian Benjamin. Support for this show is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. So Adrian, you know, there are couple of things that I'd like to kind of pull up from what you've said. And one is, you know, I think that what the, at least my excitement when I heard that announcement, we're friends on Facebook. So I saw when you announced that you got this job and I had to wrap my mind around it, because for years, many of us in my generation, they've reached out to us, but they've never really taken us seriously, or they would pick our brains and never want to compensate us for us. For the fact that they created this position is a very loud statement and a bold one. And what I want to attach to that is that there was an article that just came out that the nuns at St. Benedict's in St. Joseph's, Minnesota, sent a letter to the White Earth Nation apologizing for their role in running the Catholic boarding school at the White Earth Reservation back in 1890, 1892, up until 1945. So, and the state of California is trying to reconcile its history and its role with the federal government and how they compensated some of those early settlers to massacre the indigenous populations that lived in California. So we're beginning to see this, and I can't call it tidal wave, I call it a little trickle of recognition of what our community has been telling everyone else, the fact that, you know, that there was genocide committed against us, that our children were taken and put in boarding schools to wipe out our language and our culture, our way of life. We're the only group that the U.S. instituted a religious ban against. We're all taught in grade school that this is the land of the free. You know, people came here for religious freedom, while at the same time, we went to jail when we practiced our spirituality. We couldn't even carry an eagle feather. I'm just saying there, this is like a trickle. It's like they're just opening the spout and it's beginning to drip out. But the fact that they created this position and that you're in it, I think speaks volumes, hopefully, for progress moving forward. Because, you know, there are many companies. Land O'Lakes is another one that jumps out at me. I can remember looking at that Indian woman holding that, you know, ever since I was a small kid, let alone all the moccasins. You know, you walk into you can go down to the Southwest to Arizona to, you know, Scottsdale and walk into a store, and there they have these Indian things, and there's Minnetonka moccasins. And I would look at them going, my great grandmother made moccasins. They never looked like this, right? I mean, so, you know, for us, it's always been there, this appropriation. And the fact that, you know, and we've brought this up so many times on our program, that as American Indians, we make up less than 1% of the total population. We've been told that we're statistically insignificant and we're invisible. So our issues never rise to the top, right? But some of us have been banging our heads against the wall, hollering, you know, every opportunity we can that this is happening. We finally got the Washington Redskins to drop Redskins. How long of a battle has that been? So, you know, it's like this little trickle. And so I'm just excited as heck that you have this job called reconciliation person from Minnetonka. And I mean, I think it means that there's opportunity to continue those discussions.
You know, one of the things that came up, Adrian, I'm curious about this. We had Christine Dindizzi from the National Boarding School Healing Coalition. And I was able to sit in a talk at Truth and Reparations with Jim Baer Jacobs here and with religious communities, in particular Christian communities here, having a discussion around this. And she pushes to think about reconciliation differently. Oftentimes we hear white folks talk about reconciliation right in the midst of addressing the truth of harm, of real, you know, tangible harm, in order to hurry up and move through it. But here you've given us an example of not just, you know, moving towards trying to reconcile this several year history of this own company, you know, bankrolling from this, but there you gave examples of putting the money where their mouth is. Meanwhile, you know, you've got, you know, in all the folks you listed, Don, we still got camps, you know, scout camps and YMCA camps and all these other different camps with appropriative names where kids are still going to pick up on this, tradition. So can you speak to some of the ways that you have deepened what reconciliation means in your work and in this role with this company? Because I think that's an important piece, that this what makes this different than what many people try to say is reconciliation in other circles.
We actually had a conversation this week. We have Monday meetings. And after the news broke, I think we had a real interesting conversation that came up, you know, and with Jory and David, we're just real blunt. And they're like, I think we have to get really clear about where we want to go and what it is that we want to invest in and how we're going to go about doing it. Because I think, like, Indigenous folks specifically, and not just Indigenous folks, but a lot of POC folks have deep scars. The scarring is super deep. And when I think about reconciliation, it's going to be about consistency over time, right? Like, I mean, like, that's something I will give a shout out to my therapist says, you build trust after it's broken through consistency over time. And I think that that's what they have to do, this company, like, and it's going to come in forms of monetary investments. It's going to come in, you know, coming on shows like this and having themselves talk about it and using their voice and their light and their brand to really give back to the community in the ways, the same ways that they took, you know. One thing that I explained to them, which kind of just goes off of what Don was just talking about, is that maybe what does reconciliation mean and how can it even be done is such a loaded question, right? I think every Indigenous person or person of color has their own views of what that is. And I think oftentimes, like, we can go into these like colonial mindsets of it should be money, give me money, and I want like a check now, right? Like, and it's like, it doesn't work like that. And that's one thing at our meeting that, you know, Minnetonka was, they were both, Jory and Dave were like, we can't like pay everyone, right? Like, that's just not feasible. Like, I mean, it's not going to happen, right? Like, so how can we use these resources, use their, you know, knowledge, their stance in that business world, all of these different things to like create something, plant seeds where it can grow into to the fact that they're, that it's worth something now and it'll be still worth something in the future, and that they're a true ally moving forward to Indigenous folks to continue to shine that light. And that, and I will say, one goes one step further than that, another thing that impressed me in the meetings with them that kind of made me lean into this job a little bit more was that they were very, Jory and David were very frank in saying, like, this isn't just, we're doing this announcement and then we got away from it and now we're moving on. Like, we want this to be the legacy and the life of this company, to have Indigenous people involved with it forever, like forever. And how that looks and the way that we go about it, like, we're going to build that now. And I think that that's super meaningful. When you talk about reconciliation, like, it's not just a one and done thing. It's got to be a continuous process that shouldn't really ever stop, because that company was built on those bases, you know? So as long as it exists, reparations and the reconciliation should continue to exist within it. That's how I look at it, I guess.
Well, I think we've had quite the discussion. We've had the opportunity to listen to and talk with Adrian Benjamin, who's started a new position as a reconciliation advisor with Minnetonka Moccasin. And I'm looking forward to having her back at another time so we can see how that has grown. I'm Don Eubanks, associate at Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments or opinions that I share are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark's AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota, and partner at Dendros Group.
And I'm Holly Lee, owner of The Other Media Group and Counter Stories producer.
And Adrian Benjamin, Mille Lacs band member, artist, activist, and newly reconciliation advisor for the Minnetonka Moccasin Company.
This program is a co-production of the Counter Stories crew, The Other Media Group, and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.